It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 46 degrees under a light rain fog mist. Good old light rain fog mist. Easterly winds to 17 miles per hour at the airport right now with 93% humidity, and they are back down to 4 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is issuing a special weather statement warning of hazardous weather conditions in our area beginning tomorrow. High gale force winds are expected to start Saturday night. Coming up on the Midday Report, Senator Murkowski has reintroduced a bill and supported another supporting coastal communities and their economies. The National Marine Fisheries Service isn't completely ruling out the possibility of a summer troll season in the southeast. And there's a new speed record on Denali. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. In an indictment unsealed this afternoon, it shows former President Donald Trump has been charged with 37 federal counts, including willful retention of national defense information and making false statements. This over the classified documents found at his Florida home. NPR's Carrie Johnson has more.
Some of this was extremely highly classified material about U.S. operations, about nuclear capacities of the U.S. and some foreign governments, and other top secret information the indictment alleges Trump stored in a storage room at Mar-a-Lago, in a bathroom at Mar-a-Lago, and in other places that were not secure enough for these kinds of government secrets.
And here's Carrie Johnson. Special Counsel Jack Smith, who's been leading the investigation to the documents found at Mar-a-Lago, says laws apply to everyone.
Our laws that protect national defense information are critical to the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced.
Meanwhile, two of Trump's lawyers quit today ahead of his arraignment on Tuesday in a Miami courtroom. At least 13 people are dead after a Soviet-era dam in Russian-occupied Ukraine was destroyed this week. Both countries say floodwaters are slowly receding, as NPR's Charles Maines reports.
Russia and Ukraine continue to trade accusations over who was responsible for the destruction of the Soviet-era Kakhovka Dam on Tuesday, just as each accuses the other of continued shelling to disrupt evacuation efforts from the ensuing floods. The Kremlin spokesman praised the Russian rescue mission and said President Vladimir Putin had the situation, quote, under control. Russian-installed officials say nearly 6,000 people have now been evacuated from the Russian-held area of the flood zone. Yet those figures came as Russian independent media portrayed the federal rescue effort as disorganized, with hundreds of residents trapped on roofs with little water and few means of communication. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
A new 24-hour ceasefire between Sudan's military and a paramilitary group is scheduled to take effect early tomorrow. NPR's Zeya Batraoui has more.
The statement says Sudan's warring sides have agreed to stop bombardments and artillery strikes for 24 hours across the country. They also agreed not to use aircraft, resupply their forces, or try and advance militarily for the duration of this short ceasefire. Past agreements to pause the fighting, even for just a few days, failed to hold. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia say they share the frustration of Sudanese people about past ceasefires being violated, but say this latest attempt gives aid workers a chance to deliver humanitarian supplies. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia say they'll consider adjourning mediation talks if Sudan's military and paramilitary fail to observe this 24-hour ceasefire. Aya Batraoui, NPR News, Dubai.
Just ahead of the close, Wall Street trading higher. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Senator Lisa Murkowski reintroduced a bill and shared support for another aimed at supporting coastal communities this week. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, the legislation is aimed at investing in research and local economies.
Murkowski is bringing back the Ocean Regional Opportunity and Innovation Act. The bill would designate ocean innovation clusters for the U.S. Department of Commerce. Each so-called cluster would become a hub to support marine industries. On a call with reporters on Thursday, Murkowski said she learned about the idea of clusters about a decade ago on a trip to Iceland and saw how it could benefit Alaska.
Ocean ROI establishes regional ocean clusters, facilitate levels of discussion and participation between different stakeholders. It effectively takes public, private, and academic within a geographic region looking to promote economic growth and sustainability.
The department would also be able to award grants to establish or fund each cluster. She says her goal with the legislation is to improve communication and collaboration between fishers, researchers, and artists who make their living from Alaska's coastal economy. Murkowski also shared her support for the Coastal Communities Ocean Acidification Act. The bill would streamline communication between federal agencies and state, local, and tribal entities that are most affected by climate change. Murkowski says she wants to improve the information exchange between government agencies to enhance research into ocean acidification.
This is really a research-focused approach to ensuring that our oceans remain healthy for generations to come. We're seeing the impacts of climate change. We're seeing the impacts from increased acidification within our oceans.
Murkowski says both bills have been introduced in previous congressional sessions. However, she hopes they'll be passed alongside other climate-related bills as a package this time. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The National Marine Fisheries Service hasn't ruled out the possibility of opening the summer troll season for king salmon in southeast Alaska, despite a federal judge's recent ruling to the contrary. During a meeting held Wednesday in Sitka, NOAA's Regional Fisheries Administrator for Alaska, John Kurland, told a room full of trollers that the agency was working hard to correct the problems identified in a federal lawsuit brought by a conservation group in Washington state. If successful, southeast trollers might be able to harvest king salmon this summer, if not on the traditional date of July 1st, then possibly in August. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
To get a feel for the impact of the Wild Fish Conservancy lawsuit on southeast trollers, try sitting in a room filled with them. Grizzled oldsters, seasoned men and women hardened by life on the ocean, well-known fisheries advocates, young families, and a baby or two. John Kurland is the regional administrator for fisheries in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which, among other agencies, oversees the National Marine Fisheries Service. That's a lengthy title, but Kurland said that he is a neighbor, and he gets it.
First off, I know that there's been just a huge amount of concern about the implications of this suit and the potential for the troll fishery not to be able to open. I live in Juneau. I have a sense of how important this fishery is for southeast Alaska, for a lot of small businesses, a lot of families, a lot of communities. It's a big deal.
The Washington state-based Wild Fish Conservancy sued the National Marine Fisheries Service in federal court in 2020, arguing that nymphs had violated the Endangered Species Act by failing to fully account for the impact of southeast trolling on king salmon, an important prey for a small population of endangered orcas in Puget Sound called southern resident killer whales. The conservancy won, and a judge ordered southeast Alaska king salmon trolling shut down until the problem could be remedied. And it's just commercial trolling for Chinook in southeast Alaska. No other commercial or sport fishery anywhere from Alaska to California is affected. It's a baffling strategy, and Kurland is as surprised as anyone that the suit got this far.
We're all sort of incredulous that this suit is focusing on southeast Alaska fisheries when there are a lot bigger threats that southern resident killer whales are facing than what's happening in these fisheries. The southeast Alaska fisheries are a really small contributor to the challenges that southern resident killer whales face in their recovery. But anyway, it is what it is.
Kurland explained the nuts and bolts of the lawsuit, which were already known to many in the standing room only crowd in Sitka's Harrigan Centennial Hall. how it stemmed from a 2019 biological opinion prepared by NIMFS and the associated incidental take statement required to conduct a fishery that could affect an endangered species. He then took questions, some tough questions. Deborah Lyons is the representative from the Alaska Trollers Association to the Pacific Salmon Treaty. She wondered how the National Marine Fisheries Service could be outflanked by a nonprofit conservation organization on a question of environmental policy.
So when I look at what happened in Washington, NIMFS, who are the experts on fisheries, issued an opinion that said the Southeast fishery, yes, takes some threatened salmon and takes some salmon that are prey of an endangered whale, but in the opinion of National Marine Fisheries Service, it was not a significant threat to any of those species. And yet a group was allowed to appeal to a judge and provide hand-selected bits of data that the judge found more compelling than the opinion of the agency, the federal agency that's supposed to render these decisions. Now, how does that happen?
Curlin responded that the Endangered Species Act has a provision that allows any citizen to bring suit, and that's what the Wild Fish Conservancy did. Although the National Marine Fisheries Service has appealed to the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and asked for a decision in June, it's unlikely that the court would act so fast. Instead, Curland, without giving away too much legal strategy, said NIMFS had one trump card it could play.
The agency has the authority under the Endangered Species Act to issue a new biological opinion and a new incidental take statement. It could be reviewed by the court. The court doesn't need to approve it up front, but it's certainly possible that the plaintiffs will take issue with whatever we put out, and will ask the court to review it. But there is no implicit requirement or explicit requirement for the court to approve it before it takes effect.
This prompted troller Robert Bateman to drill down.
It's my understanding that once the ITS and the new biop has been written, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can basically put that in effect straight away. Now, if that didn't happen before July 1st, could we maybe go fishing in August still?
So your question is, if we are not able to get the new incidental take coverage in place by July 1st, but we get it in later, could there be an opening later in the season? Yes.
Curland was joined at the meeting by an attorney from the U.S. Department of Justice, which is representing the National Marine Fisheries Service. Curland explained that the DOJ stepped in any time someone sues the government, and he said, "I get sued all the time." Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A 60-foot Polynesian voyaging canoe docked in Haines yesterday afternoon. The Hakulea is about to embark on a trip around the Pacific. KHNS's Alan DePremenil has more.
The Hakulea is a traditional Polynesian sailing canoe built for crossing oceans. The Polynesian Voyaging Society is reviving the indigenous sailing techniques of the Pacific Ocean without instruments, navigating by the stars and a deep knowledge of the ocean. The boat is built of fiberglass and was shipped from Hawaii to Juneau. The crew put the boat back together and they are visiting the towns of Haines, Huna, and Yakutat to honor old friends in the Tlingit community. This is a preamble. Volunteers plan on sailing the boat around the Pacific with the official start of their tour in Juneau, their next stop. Hundreds of people came to the Chilkoot Indian Association dock on Monday afternoon to welcome the Hakulea and its crew. Two crews in traditional Tlingit canoes paddled out to meet them in the Lynn Canal. Tribal members wore regalia, danced, and sang to welcome the crew. The visitors offered their own song in return. Moani Hemuli arrived on Hokulea.
So my name is Moani Hemuli and I am the captain from Puna to Haines.
How was sailing?
Oh, we didn't do any sailing. We were just towed up here just for time. But I mean, it was beautiful, the trip up here. Yeah.
Are you navigating with GPS and modern instruments?
Yeah, currently we're using a GPS, but because of the inland waterways. But normally in the deep sea, we'll just use all of our non-instrument navigation.
Are you rotating the role of captain as you travel?
Yeah, we are. So this crew here started in Yakutat. So from Yakutat to Huna, our fellow crew member Maleko was the captain. And then from Huna to Haines, I was the captain. And then from Haines to Juneau, we'll have another crew member, Mark Ellis, be the captain. Alaska is our first stop, and it's the start of a bigger four-year voyage called Moana Nui Akea. Moana Nui Akea is a name in Hawaiian for the Pacific Ocean. So it's a four-year voyage starting in Alaska and ending back home in Hawaii. So we'll be sailing around the Pacific Rim for 4 years. Yeah, and it's a mission of ours to protect our island Earth, really. And what better way than to start in a beautiful place like Alaska? And really, it's just so that we can learn from all these other cultures and these other peoples who are fighting the same battles as we are in Hawaii. Like things like clean water, we want those, and education for our kids. And then it's also a great way to perpetuate our culture by doing this non-instrument navigation.
Are you going to be on the boat for 4 years?
I won't be on the boat for 4 years. We're all volunteers. So we do about a month, month and a half on. And then we go back to our lives and our jobs back home. And then when we get the call from captains, we go again.
What's your life back home?
I'm a boat builder back home. I'm also a teacher. So, yeah, I build canoes back home and I teach kids how to sail them.
That sounds like a good life.
It's a great life.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
After exchanging songs, the crew went to get some rest before the potlatch-style dinner planned for the evening. They will visit Klokwan on Tuesday. The Hokulea and its crew will depart for Juneau on Thursday. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremenil.
There is a new speed record for climbing Denali. Earlier this week, American climber Jack Kinzel shattered the previous fastest known time by about 90 minutes, making the round trip from base camp on the Kahiltna Glacier to the summit and back in 10 hours, 14 minutes, 57 seconds. KTNA's Philip Manning spoke with Kinzel after he returned to Talkeetna.
The National Park Service does not keep speed climbing records, so it's up to the community of extreme athletes to keep track of it themselves. That's primarily done through a website called Fastest Known Time. Before his attempt on Denali, Jack Kinzel held 22 speed records on mountains around the world, according to that website. In the past, those records relied largely on the honor system. Today, a combination of GPS data and live tracking allow for easier verification. There are no medals, trophies, or certificates for speed climbing Denali. For Kinzel, the motivation comes down to a sense of accomplishment.
I think like at one end of the spectrum, you have like a pure physical test. You have like a 5K. And then at the other end, you have something like this where it's like, you know, it's a physical test. It's also a test of your ability to acclimatize and to select, you know, a proper window to like prepare the route and have a good boot pack to take the right gear. And then it's also a test of like your ability to ski.
While the climb itself took less than half a day, Kenzel spent 10 days on the mountain preparing, acclimatizing, and waiting for good weather. He says when his window arrived, the weather was perfect.
We got so lucky with the weather that day that I wore the same outfit the entire day from the very start to the summit. I wore a, you know, kind of a long sleeve sun hoodie and then a pair of tights that were like electrically heated and electrically heated socks. But that's all I wore. Like on the summit, all I had was a sun hoodie on.
Speed climbing Denali is an enormous physical and mental challenge. It's also dangerous. Rapid elevation change can lead to a number of medical conditions. Already this season, mountaineering rangers have reported a high number of evacuations due to altitude-related edema from rapid ascents. In addition to the physical challenge, Kenzel describes the mental struggle he dealt with on Denali.
When I'm really pushing it at altitude, I find sometimes I get like a little bit of anxiety and just induced from the altitude, and you know, my brain just kind of, you know, I felt like mush, and like my legs felt like noodles on the summit. So that was like a little bit concerning. So I wanted to make sure I was making good decisions on the way down.
Like many climbers, Kenzel took along an InReach device, which let him keep in touch with the outside world via text. After returning, what had been his potential lifeline on Denali has caused a little anxiety of its own.
I'm like 90% certain I went to the unlimited texting on my like little satellite device, but I really hope so, because it's like 50 cents a message. And I looked this morning and I'd sent 1,400 messages in the 10 days I was on the mountains.
Kenzel says he doesn't plan on taking on another challenge on the scale of Denali, at least not this summer. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
Stocks open mixed. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. The S&P 500 is now officially in a bull market because it surged 20% from its most recent low. The S&P is dominated by tech stocks. They've rallied because of gains in artificial intelligence. Both the Dow and NASDAQ are already in bull market territory. It's not clear how long the bull market will last, though. The Federal Reserve meets next week on interest rates. It's been raising them to cool inflation, but if rates get too high, they could cause a recession. Some traders are betting the Fed will skip a rate hike next week. Shares in Adobe popped after the company said it would start offering businesses a package deal, giving them access to its Firefly generative AI tool. Adobe says firms can train Firefly to make custom images and text. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 9th day of June, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:10. It'll set again at 11:07. That will give us 17 hours and 57 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 45 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low is 35 degrees. That was set in 1939 and 1972. And our record high temperature was 73 degrees, set in 2013. Currently 46 degrees in Kodiak with a light rain fog mist that we've become so familiar with. East winds to 17 and visibility at 4 miles out at the airport. But fear not, the weather is changing. The Weather Service has issued a special weather statement warning of hazardous weather conditions in our area. A large front stretching all the way from Homer to Prince William Sound will bring unseasonably strong storms and gusty winds with heavy rain beginning on Saturday and going into Sunday. Sorry, Saners. The front associated with this low will lift northward and extend across the Gulf. Gusty winds and heavy rain. As the front weakens Sunday night, winds will diminish, though you can expect the rain to linger a little longer all the way through Monday. Well, let's hear about the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's salmon opener.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 1, date issued June 6th at 10 a.m. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Sunday, June 11th, in the following areas, in the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 10th, in the following areas, in the Anton Larson Bay, Sheratine Bay, Kujuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Euganic Bay, Spearin Bay, Zach Yakker Bay and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Friday, June 9th, and remain open until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Iziwit Bay sections of the Afognak District, and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Friday, June 9th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters will be reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And, Mariners, here is your specific weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for tomorrow. Southeast 15 today, seas to 6 feet. South 15 tonight, seas to 5 feet. Tomorrow, south 15 becoming east 30 in the afternoon, 6-foot seas. And for Saturday night, east winds to 40 knots and 13-foot seas. For Sunday, south winds to 30 knots and 15-foot seas on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for Saturday as well, with east winds to 20 knots today, seas to 4 feet, east 15 tonight, and 4-foot seas. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, look for variable 10 becoming east 25 in the afternoon, 2-foot seas building to 6 feet in the afternoon. And for Saturday night on our west side, northeast winds to 45 knots and seas to 16 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a special meeting next Wednesday in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. That meeting will begin at 1 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, and members of the public are also encouraged to web stream the meeting. That link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. You can also listen to the meeting right here on 100.1 FM KMXT. If you have any more questions, contact the clerk's office at 907-486-8636. Everybody has an opinion about bears that seem increasingly apt to wander around the city of Kodiak. Join the town hall meeting about living with bears in Kodiak at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 17th at Bayside Fire Hall. Let your concerns be known, learn about living with bears around town, and talk with representatives of the agencies that deal with bears to share your ideas about managing life with bears in Kodiak. Contact the Department of Fish and Game at 486-1800 for more information.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 9th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Sometimes it's hard to remember how beautiful Kodiak is, but these long stretches of fog bring about another kind of beauty to Kodiak. There's something about the quiet on a foggy day that is magical, and the mist on the green moss of the forest makes it even more vibrant. But one of my favorite mist-covered plants are young lupin plants. The furry leaves of the lupin plant hang onto the water droplets, giving the plant an ethereal glow. If you're fond of macro photography, getting up close and personal to a lupin plant on a foggy day is pretty cool. Whatever the weather is, there are things to get out there and enjoy. Just dress for success in your best rain gear. Salmon don't mind the rain, and it is fishing season. Whether you want to pursue dollies off of Mission Beach or try your luck with some red salmon at the Buskin, it's time to get that summer fishing gear tuned up and ready to go. Then get out there and wet a line. This time of year, we all become a little more bear aware than we are in the wintertime. Kodiak is known for its bears and for the humans who work to coexist with them. Like any coexistence, it takes effort to make it work, and sometimes there are bumps in the road. What to do to coexist and how to react as a community when there's a bump in the road of that coexistence is the topic of a town hall meeting coming up next weekend. It's both an opportunity to learn about Kodiak's bears as well as a chance to talk about your experiences and ideas about living with bears. This event is open to everyone of all ages. The forum will be at Bayside Fire Hall next Saturday, June 17th at 5:30 p.m. See you there. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.